WLFP Braddock.
Good morning, listeners and the diners and travelers of the world. Tuned in to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning.
Yes.
Good morning. We have an even better good morning to Philippe Verheyden.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Over there.
Yeah, and he's on vacation in southwestern France in an up and coming wine region, at least for us in the United States, called Cahors, Cahors. And I'm sure you're probably sampling something as we speak.
Well, I'm still in my swimming suit now, so but I have my glass of wine with me, so everything's okay.
That's wonderful.
Now you're based in Brussels or just Belgium?
Well, I'm based in, we are based in the northern part of Belgium, which is called Flanders. It's
okay.
A very small country, Belgium. But we have two parts, the northern part and the southern part. And in the northern part, we speak Flemish, so which is comparable to what the Dutch speak. And in the southern part, they speak French.
Right, yes.
Very small country, but with lots of languages.
I love the country. I love Brussels. I never thought I was going to be so in love with the place.
Yeah, we've been in Brussels twice.
And Antwerp. And then we went to see the Ghent altarpiece. We were in Ghent.
Yeah.
And we were in Bruges.
In Bruges, and that's where the Ghent altarpiece is. In Bruges,
you did the right thing.
No,
you should come back.
The altarpiece is in Ghent.
Okay, and we were in Bruges as well.
Bruges, we were on a different day, and everybody in Bruges came out to shop because it stopped raining.
Yeah,
apparently they do that.
Now, Philippe, you and your photographer Tony Leduc, produced this book called The Basics, which is It's an absolutely fascinating book, the equivalent of The Little Black Dress. It's a little black book, which Peter has another bit on that.
The little black book was where gentlemen kept their private phone numbers
right.
and contact information.
Yeah.
But how did you get the idea of doing it as a little black book? Does that mean something different in Belgium?
No. And that's a very nice comparison you made with all that personal numbers. I was thinking. I'm a cook by formation, and I was a food writer for about 10 years, and then I got the idea. Well, and when we started the publishing house, also which is called Homarish, we started it together, Tony and I.
Yeah, I didn't understand that from just the information I had. So you've already launched a whole publishing house.
Yeah, we launched our publishing house. We were working together for, let's say, 10 years. And I had a sort of idea that there are lots and lots of cookbooks being published every year, but without any added value. There are lots of books here in Europe which are simply copies of other cookbooks and just with some new photographs or some changed recipes. And that, to me, is not enough. We live in a very modern world, and when you want information, you just click on your computer and you have it. But not all of that information is trustworthy. And I wanted to make something which is trustworthy. And I said to myself, I asked myself a question, if I should have been, or if I was a beginner, I wanted to learn to cook, which 150 recipes should be the basic recipes that I absolutely should know, and so that everybody should know to start cooking. And that's where I got the idea from. And to be honest, it's not really my recipes. It's what I learned in cookery school. So but what I did, I took these recipes and I stripped them down to their most essential part and just gave them in that little book.
So you were a trained chef.
Yeah, I'm a trained chef. I worked approximately five years in restaurants. And then I started writing in a few magazines here in Belgium, and both on wine and food. And I strongly believe that people are looking for correct information on food and also on wine. And there's a lot of things being published that are not very correct or not always correct. There is so much going on, and you need to people need something to hold on. We can see that here in Europe. I don't know how that is in the States, and I don't want to make or I don't want to reinvent the wheel. I don't know if you know that expression.
Yes.
But I just wanted to make a book and give a signal that said, well, here is, if you want to start cooking, you really should know these recipes.
And
go on now.
You have different sections. There's cooking techniques, and there you run through to lard, to dry marinate, to poach, to steam, etc. Then you have cooking techniques, cutting techniques, such as brunoise and julienne, chiffonade, and different stocks, thickeners, night soups, hearty soups. Now, where do you think where did you find the most misinformation that you were able to correct with this book?
Well, this is, when you talk about brunoise and julienne, it's a very good example, because all these things are always mentioned in cookery books, and they are mentioned in recipes as if everybody knows what's brunoise and julienne like. But I thought maybe there are people who don't know the difference between brunoise and julienne. And there is a complete, they are completely different. There is a complete different mouth feel when you get the brunoise, the little dice. It gives a very croquant feeling in your mouth, while julienne is very, very smooth and very gentle and very, very aromatic. So I wanted to give that information, the information you find in cookery books, which is taken for granted. So I wanted to go deeper and give that information.
Well, you certainly have done that.
He's got everything. I'm on page 88 with agar-agar, that ingredient that Wiley Dufresne at WD-50 uses to create wonderful foie gras with the beet in the center, with the beet juice in the center.
Yeah, Heston Blumenthal and Farinadri use that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know your world.
Yeah, so this is
I know my world. I've been at this a long time.
This is not just a simple book. I mean,
he wrote this.
A simple book, but it's really not.
If you look at the introduction, it says that he wants to write a book, state of the art, for the future, not just for the past.
No, yeah, that's true.
Now, you remember, you were going to make pesto today, so now you have a whole new recipe.
Oh, yes, I
keep. You forgot.
I forgot. And the way it's organized, you have the technique, and then it's fronted by an absolutely spectacular photograph, a real photograph of the process of the food.
Yeah, so we chose to make a very simple structure for the book. So you have the recipe on the left side, which is always, I try to be as short as possible, so only the essence and maybe a small tip underneath the recipe for, well, if you want to do more of this kind, well, use then that, more of that, etc. Things, small things like that, but only the recipe in its most essential form. And I also, I prepared it, and then Tony took a photograph of it just as it is in reality. There was no how do you call that in English?
Extraneous.
False or fake items being used. It was all the real stuff.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so much of food photography is that way.
So
it's wonderful to see that that you did it exactly that way.
We did the interview with the man who wanted the who was that? Was that Pong? That he wanted it to be real, so he allowed crumbs on the cake platter and stuff like that.
Absolutely. The most interesting guy we talked to about that was Frank Stitt from the Highlands Bar and Grill in Birmingham, Alabama. He has four seasonal menus, Philippe, and so he photographed all the dishes on the menus, but he took them in the light of the season.
Yeah.
So in fall the colors were darker. In winter the color was very drab. Because they actually took them outside in what the natural light was like.
Yeah, I think that is very, very important. And that's what because the basics is the first book of a trilogy. And we started, we made the book in 2004. It was our first book, the first book of Romarus, of our small publishing house. And it still is, it still is the basics of our ideology or of our philosophy. And also, it's our first book, so it's the basic book. But we did two afterwards. We did the ingredient the year after, and we did the dish in 2006. So and on the European market. Yeah.
What are those about?
Well, the ingredient, I took 150 ingredients from the most daily ones, like tomatoes or potatoes are already in the basics, but let's say carrots or lettuce or cabbage, things like that, things that people use every day. But I also looked for foie gras or sweetbreads or oysters, very gastronomical things.
Oh,
and also ingredients that are more unknown, and especially condiments than or spices like tonka beans. I don't know if you know them over there.
What are they, tonka beans?
Or tonka beans. It's a bean from a tree. It grows in India normally, and in Africa, and in a few places in South America. And it has a smell like vanilla.
Oh,
it's
my.
Very cheap. It's cheaper than vanilla, because vanilla is a very expensive spice.
Right.
And lots of people tend to use it instead of vanilla, especially if you're making ice cream. You can use these tonka beans, and they have a sort of aroma like vanilla and almonds, something in between. It's a very special thing. And so what I did, I took 150 of these ingredients, and I looked for the best way to prepare them. I didn't give any recipe for a whole dish in the ingredient in that book, but just the way of preparing the ingredient so that it comes out at its best, so that you can really have the carrots in their most perfect way, you know.
But let's get back to basics for just
do we get a hold of these other two books?
Well, normally we have just published the basics on the American market now.
Okay.
And we found ourselves a fantastic co-editor, which is Melville House. And fantastic, why? Because they have the same sort of philosophy. They started with the two of them. I think it was a couple. She was a photographer and he is an artist. I'm not married to Tony, of course. But Tony is a photographer. I'm a food writer or a chef. And Melville, well, it's about Moby Dick and well, the link to the sea is there. And for us also, Homaris, so that's Latin for lobster. So they are doing a wonderful job. And, we hope that the basics will be a success in the States. And then we will publish the next one next year, I hope.
Well, they have this gets really down to basics. There is on page 200, how to boil an egg.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it gives the secret that we thought was our secret, which is to prick a little hole in it. We actually have a machine, a punching machine, which has been on our refrigerator door for 35 years.
Oh, that's perfect.
Which is perfect for punching a hole in the egg.
It's nice. We don't have that here in Europe.
Well, I've never seen one since. but
if you look one page further, you can see the recipe for we call that Spiegel Egg, which is I don't have the book with me here, so
The next page is a poached egg, then the next page is a fried egg. Then the next page is scrambled egg. The next page is omelette.
Omelette.
And then on page 210 is a wonderful thing called a deep fried egg.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, are you in a mad rush, Philippe?
No.
Or can you hang on while we take a break?
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay, so we'll take a break now.
The internet is crucial to your business. Everybody knows this, but did you know Nidhogg is the company you should call for internet service? Nidhogg, personal web page hosting for less. Business web page hosting, Nidhogg offers both Unix and NT server support. Nidhogg is the company you should call for dedicated internet access. Nidhogg offers DSL for high speed, low cost, always on access. DSL is great. It means no more dial-up. Oh, by the way, do you remember that thing called the telephone? Do you remember when people used phone lines to access the internet? Oh, I'm sorry, you still use dial-up? Well, Nidhogg does that too. Local access telephone numbers. Okay, I don't understand it all either, but I do know that I need it, and I know where to get it. Nidhogg. NIDHOG.com, 412-661-5917. That's 661-5917, or log on NIDHOG.com. Internet the NIDHOG way.
Welcome back. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. Don't forget to check out our website, because we always have interesting, new and interesting things going on there. That's onthemenuradio.com. And we're having this wonderful conversation with Philippe Verheyden. Is it Haydn or Haydn, Philippe?
Verheyden,
okay.
Yeah.
Who is author of a gorgeous small book. Do you know the dimensions of it offhand, Philippe?
Well, it's I can only give it in centimeters.
That's okay.
Far away.
That's 12 by 16. So it looks like it's a very small book, and we especially made it that small because you it's a sort of thing to have. You can keep it under your arm.
Yes.
It looks a bit like a small Bible with the black cover.
Oh, I forgot about that. It does look like that. But it has and it has gold writing, and it has little ribbons, markers, page markers.
Yeah, in red. Yeah,
in red. Oh, smart, very handsome, and it has gilt around the edges. And before I forget, you can go on our website under OTM
bookshelf
and order this book. You can read about it and see it and order it. And another thing is that Philippe just told us that you can check on all his activities and their other books by going on their website, which is homarus.be for Belgium, which is where they're located.
And I'm guessing these books are actually available in Europe already, Philippe.
Yes, they are available in Europe. Normally the only book which you can buy in the States is the basics, although I think on Amazon.com and all those international websites you can find anything, so you can find them over there. But if they can send us an email also, and then
is it in Flemish?
We can send the books, that's no problem.
Are they in English, Flemish, French?
Well, all of our books are in Dutch and in French, because we're living in a bilingual nation.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, the only one in English is the basics. We made an English, a British English version and an American English version, which was very difficult for me because with all those ounces and liquid ounces and all the floss, that's not simple.
But and you were telling us in the break that you're hopefully headed to the U.S. in the fall, in the autumn season, and you'll be on Martha Stewart on October 21st, I think you said?
Yeah, on October 24th. That's what they told us. So I will be there during that week. I will be in New York, and I'm very looking forward to that, to be honest.
Oh, you'll have a wonderful time, and if you run out of restaurant recommendations, I'm sure we can help.
What restaurants should I visit in New York?
Well, we can't. We don't have time to cover those on the air.
There's so many of them.
But
email us. We don't have your email address, do we?
Yeah, it's Philip. So FILIP.
Okay.
At homarus.be.
So we can communicate via email for that.
Yeah, and keep in touch with us directly with email because we will certainly announce when you're going to appear on Martha Stewart and any developments like that. We're always interested in providing our listeners with that information.
That's very nice. So
if Amy's going to do a book tour, then we could post where you're going to be when, too.
Ah, that's nice. I will keep you informed together with the people from IC Media, I guess.
Right. Yeah, Amy's, we work together a lot.
It's very simple, Philippe. On the menu at onthemenuradio.com.
That's perfect.
Now, we talked in a break, listeners, so I'm not putting Philippe on the spot, but I said, are you a chef anymore? He said, no, I'm really not a chef anymore. Now I'm an author.
A publisher.
And an author as well.
And an author as well.
But you did say that you would give our listeners recommendations on what would be some of the best places to dine in your country.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very glad to do that.
So fire away. So,
fire away. One of the best restaurants to me is De Schone van Boskoop. De Schone van Boskoop, which means, I don't know if you, it's a variety of an apple. Yeah?
Oh, okay.
And it's a one-star restaurant. The guy, he's a very good friend of mine. He cooks, he cooks through his emotions, and his cuisine is very powerful, but very delicate in the same way. And he cooks with forgotten vegetables, forgotten fruits, things you don't find anymore in the shops and in the supermarkets. And he has a very important signal to the world. And he's doing a wonderful job. So
and where is he?
He's in the province of Antwerp. So okay. Not in the city, but in the province. And he's in Buchhout. It's a very small village, a quarter of an hour away from Antwerp, from the city of Antwerp. So that's really no big deal. And I think he will get his second star this in December this year.
Oh, great!
Yeah, when we were in Antwerp, we found a restaurant that was up just a tiny little alley. It almost didn't look like it could get through this doorway. And I can't remember the name of the restaurant now, but we talked to the chef, and we said, "Are you interested in Michelin stars?" He said, "I'm not interested in any of that. If they come in, I throw them out."
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was Mark Paasbrugge. The guy you spoke, a big guy with glasses?
He was a big guy. Now, his restaurant was a funny name, like King Charles or something. It was an odd name. It's in my files. I really don't remember it.
Yeah, I can't find the words now. I can't remember the name. I know the name, but I can't remember it now. But he had two Michelin stars, and he was getting more and more stressed. And one day he said, "Well, go away. I don't want you anymore. I want to do my own thing. I don't want you to tell me what I must do." And so he just gave up his two Michelin stars, but he went on cooking on a very high level, and people loved him for that.
There you go.
But I can't find the name anymore.
Now, I think I have a feeling it's on our website. I'll double check my files, but I'm pretty sure I put it up there. So if you look at Belgium and Antwerp, listeners, you should be able to find it, and you can do the same and think if it's the same place. Now, where else would you suggest?
Well, I would certainly suggest the best three-star restaurant in Belgium, which is Hof van Kleve. Peter Goossens is the chef over there, and he's the talk of the town, really. He's certainly not in a town. He's in a very small village in the Vlaamse Ardennen, the Flemish Ardennes. And I'm sorry for that.
Now, we went to a place called Comme chez Soi.
Yeah, Comme chez Soi lost. It had three stars since 1973, but it lost this year. It lost this one star because the chef Pierre Wijnands isn't cooking anymore.
Oh wow!
And
it's the son-in-law now, and he's the level is not that high anymore. So it's only two stars anymore, and it was a big fuss in Belgium, you know.
Yeah, well, it was a big fuss. I remember we asked the maitre d' if he could take photographs, and he said only if the chef doesn't see you.
Oh, I remember that.
Remember that
place,
right?
Yeah, but that's also the old way of cooking, the old image of a restaurant, very neat and very stiff. Mm-hmm. And there is lots of young chefs cooking now. Cooking their way around in Belgium, you know, and using new techniques, but not just copying these new Spanish techniques, and especially from El Bulli,
and
other Spanish chefs.
A place I remember that we liked was right on the big square called Lola.
Oh, Lola.
That's in Antwerp on the...
No, it's in Brussels. This is on the Grand Sablon, almost across the plaza from the Wittemer chocolate.
We love Wittemer. We interviewed the daughter. She is so wonderful.
Yeah?
Yeah, I can't remember her name, but she was Wittemer.
And didn't you visit Pierre Marcolini? Because Wittemer is on the one side of the market.
And yeah.
Yeah, and Marcolini is on the other side.
Right.
Vitamare is a very big classic. Yeah?
Oh,
but
yeah.
But Marcolini is very new and very. He's a very intelligent guy, young guy. He has a shop in Tokyo, opened a shop in Tokyo.
Oh my goodness!
Or a few shops even in Japan, and he's doing lots of experiments with chocolate.
He's doing health stuff too, isn't he? I mean, like the green tea infused chocolates and all those botanicals and whatnot.
Yeah.
I tell you, we were there at Easter time. I've never seen so much chocolate candy in my whole entire life.
No, I mean, I grew up in England. I thought we had a lot of chocolate until we were in Brussels at Easter.
Well, don't talk Belgians about chocolate and beer.
Oh, now here's a suggestion for your next book. A thing that is catching on here in the U.S. right now, in fact, it was a feature of our program 2 weeks ago, is beer dinners, pairing beer with food.
Yeah,
and that's something that certainly a Belgian ought to be interested in exploring, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. But I did something like that, to be honest, in a book I made for together with Tony, together with a photographer, but for another publishing house. It was before we started our own.
Okay.
And I for each recipe I looked for a wine to accompany. But also a beer, because it doesn't always have to be wine.
Yeah, see, that
there are lots of beers with a very interesting palate.
Here in America, of course, we think we invented everything first. But I should have guessed that Belgium, with its love of beer, would be far ahead of us.
Well, we have in Belgium, we have they say 3,000 beers, but none of them are they're not all different beers. Lots of them are. Just the same beer, but with a different name, so we call them etiquette beers. But nevertheless, we have very, very authentic beers within a very authentic taste here.
Right, it's a whole category, isn't it?
They don't make wine in Belgium.
Well, people are starting now.
There are a few
young wine growers. And because of global warming, we have to mention that average temperature is rising, and the Belgian wines, which are mostly white, are becoming better and better. I must mention that.
Well, you know, if you're growing champagne grapes and making champagne in England, anything is possible.
Yeah, well, but to be honest, in England, the champagne style wines are getting better and better. They are using the traditional champagne grapes, which are Chardonnay and Pinot Noir and Pinot Meunier. And they are making very good efforts. They are making very good results nowadays. And to be honest, they have the same in the south of England.
Yeah. Well, Philippe, we could talk on and on and on with you, but we're getting signals again from our program director. So would you...
I was going to talk about the third book.
Go ahead. You have at least a minute to do that. Go ahead.
Okay. So so we talked about the basics, then we talked about the ingredients, and the third book of the trilogy, to end it all, is called The Dish. And what I did, I looked for 150 classics from all over the world. So a quiche Lorraine, a cassoulet from France, but also a tom yam koon, and the Thai soup. Or a chicken green curry from Thailand.
Oh, wow.
I looked for typical Belgian recipes. I looked for typical British recipes. There is a full English breakfast. The recipe for a full English breakfast is included.
That's a winner.
So that's well, to me, it is.
Yeah, I know. We always do. We get that. Yeah.
We get that.
We do get that.
We get that. We've had it so well done sometimes we took a photograph.
Well, listen,
okay.
Philippe, you've been an absolute delight, and
well, you too.
Yeah, and I hope we can touch base again for you.
I'm going to put Belgium back on our book on our tour agenda,
right?
Because there's obviously more that we could cover with Philippe's guidance.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, if you need more information, just you have my email now,
right.
philippe@homares.be.
Yes.
I can give you my mobile if you want it. I'm very glad to help you out if you want to know something about Belgium.
Good. You can email us that. I think you don't want to give it over the air because it'll go on the internet.
You
don't want everybody to have your cell phone.
So what's your email?
It's on the menu at onthemenuradio.com. And I'm getting mad signals because now we have to say goodbye and take a break.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
So thank you for this interview, and thanks for the interest in the book.
Loved it. Thanks, Philippe.
See you soon. Bye.
Bye.
The flagship station of the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. This is 1550 WLFP, Pittsburgh.
Hi, friends. I'm Phil Marcus, the host of Real Estate 101, heard every Saturday here on The Edge, AM 1550. If you've been thinking about selling your house or buying a house, I'd like to speak with you. Choosing the right agent is one of the first and most important steps in the process of buying or selling real estate. It's critical that you choose an agent who has the knowledge and experience to not only find that perfect new home for you, but to also be able to guide you step by step through the often complicated real estate process. If you don't already have a realtor, may I offer my services? I've been a real estate agent in Pittsburgh for almost 30 years. I'm a life member of the Realtors Association, and I'm proud to say that I've earned both the GRI and the coveted CRS professional designations. Won't you call me at RE/MAX Heritage? The phone number is 412-241-4200, extension 154, or my email address is phil@philmarcus.com. That's 412-241-4200, extension 154, or phil@philmarcus.com. Let's talk.
Welcome back to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. We had to say goodbye to our new friend, Philippe.
What a fascinating guy!
Oh, he was wonderful.
Really wonderful guest.
Great little book, The Basics.
Yeah, we're gonna have to get to know him better.
Yeah.
And we had a cliffhanger last week.
We did.
We said we're going to do more California. We're going to do some great new places in California. Boy, do we have some great new places for you! First up, a new star in the restaurant Firmament in San Francisco. One of the best-known new restaurants there is Restaurant Michael Minna, named for the founder, who we can't say we're grateful he doesn't cook there anymore, but...
No, I should say not.
but he sure has a great guy in his place.
He's certainly a great chef. But
he's a great chef.
A chef de cuisine is totally a knockout. Let's listen to him talking
to him. He also said he now had time to redo Michael's menu. So let's hear what he had to say.
At Michael Minna Restaurant in San Francisco, the first quandary I have is actually pronouncing our chef's name, because it's French, really, but he's, as he described it, 10th generation Long Island. It's Chris
Lamadou,
which is Man of God.
Correct.
Now, you've been just about everywhere cooking, back and forth, both coasts, Hawaii. Briefly, how has this all happened?
Being raised in New England, my tendency was to remove myself from it once I got an opportunity, and California was a likely place for me to try to expand a culinary career with its wine access and its produce access. Once being here for extended time, Hawaii was kind of a fantasy of mine, which I got to experience. And then my roots being back in New England and in the around Manhattan, it seemed inevitable that I would return. And after a brief time back with my family and friends and with Chef Keller and per se, I found myself once again wanting to be in California with the product and with the people and the lifestyle that I really, really enjoy.
Now, you've worked back and forth with Michael Minna, actually. But this is your second stint at least, and you've been here only 4 months, and you said you've already changed the menu?
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to work for Michael right out of school. I've worked in and around his restaurants for 5 or 6 years before leaving, and upon my return, our comfort level has allowed me to jump in and be very creative in his restaurant right here in San Francisco.
Now, you said it just so well before about when I said, what style of cooking do you do? Chefs hate when I ask that, and I don't mean a little label back. Just tell me about how you go about doing what you do.
Generally, I try to describe what I do is I'm product and technique driven. Although I try to contemporize style and understand what's going on with trends, yet not really let that over what's going on around the menu. Again, it's product first, technique as well, and I think that's what brings us to the results we look for.
You love farmers.
I do. I believe that the relationship between the chef and the farmer, whether it be animal or produce, is one that needs to be as direct as possible. For a chef to be satisfied or a farmer to be satisfied, there needs to be a realization and a direct link between the two, and certainly an appreciation, which I, through time, have developed and definitely grown with certain ones, as well open to others.
What are your favorite products to work with? You seem to like meat.
Yeah, I think that's really a backlash to the fact that I worked at Aqua for so long, where the beginning of my career was so centered around seafood. Even I started working in restaurants on Nantucket. My family has a background in fishing. And so I think that as my career developed, I just naturally moved towards something new, which was meat in the last, you know, 7 or 8 years that I've really expanded on. So currently that's where it's at. We'll see where it goes.
Now, the menu lists the names of the suppliers, which is certainly in vogue this time. You have some great names. Could you just list a few of them?
I'm very close to Four Story Hill Farms, Sylvia Price. I'm very close with Elysian Fields Farm. That's Keith Martin. I have a lot of special farmers that I'm using through a forager named Carrie Clasby. She's based out of Santa Barbara, but represents small farms from Santa Cruz all the way down to San Diego. So there's All Star Organics, there's Frog Hollow Farms, there's a lot of small people that are specializing in exceptional product that I'm developing with, which I really enjoy.
Yeah, well, we found that chefs said the same about San Diego. I mean, it really affects your cooking to have this larder.
Without a doubt. And returning from New York, and again, I can't speak highly enough about the restaurant scene in New York. The competency of the cooks, the passion of the diners, but the only element for me as a chef that I felt I was missing was the hands-on product that's available here in California. It is by far second to nothing.
Chef, this restaurant is so elegant. I believe it was designed by Barbara Barry, who's a very famous interior designer. And you even have special plates. Who did the special plates?
Bernadeau designed the trio concept plates for Michael. It's a larger mold that's compartmentalized in order to facilitate the trio style, which is three preparations on a single plate that are interrelated in order to give the guests some variance as the meal progresses. I like to think of this as a means to combat palate fatigue, or basically being underwhelmed by the conclusion of a plate because of the volume of what you're consuming. And I think Michael's ideas behind this is really remarkable, because in a time where a tasting menu or a drawn-out format is really one of the easier or more traditional ways of achieving this, he's managed to create a dining experience that replicates that under a better time constraint and within the context of maybe traditional three-course dining. So it's the only restaurant I know that's done this. And again, it speaks highly of Michael's ability to conceptualize and execute things on levels where, you know, contemporary cuisine isn't yet there.
You know, I know that the design or the schematic kind of this menu is on purpose. I don't know quite how you'd start deciding what you'd want to have. How about pointing out just some, like, what is the seasonal menu? Where are the classics? And how would you approach this menu if you were a diner?
as a diner, the first kind of the first things I would decide is what kind of experience I'm looking for. Am I looking for one that's been plotted for me? And that would steer me towards the tasting menu. Otherwise, I would probably approach the three-course menu. And depending on my history with Michael's Food, if I was more interested in or I wanted to reconnect with some of his dishes from his earlier experiences at Aqua, I would go down to the classics and maybe enjoy a tartare or a pot pie. If I was interested in looking at where he's moving forward with this food right now, I would check out and try to see something within the realm of the three courses that I was looking for. And then, we also have guests that do a starter from the classics and finish with a trio entree, and that's kind of a best of both worlds approach. And again, quantity-wise, it all amounts to about the same amount of food. So it's kind of figuring out where you want to go. What is nice is that the servers, because the format is very unique, and now the restaurant's 3.5 years old, the servers have really become adept at kind of confronting the fears that guests have, because it is a difficult menu when you look at it. It's very not wordy, but it's lengthy. So the servers are very good asset in the decision making process when you're here at the restaurant.
Now you were very serious about making sure that the tasting experience also extends to the wine.
Yeah, as I approached the trio concept, which was in existence when I got here, one of my first interest in it was how did it relate directly to the wine program. Our wine director, Raj Parr, has put together a remarkable wine list. And for me, I would never want the food to contradict or to do anything but complement the wine. So as I navigated my way through creating dishes, what I kept in mind was, does the first, second, and third option on the plate all have the ability to complement a single wine? And when I can answer that with yes, and that's when I would approach our wine director and our wine department with tastings and pairings, and then they can come up with their own recommendations, which they do very well.
Is this cheating if I would ask you to mention what we're going to have tonight, at least a dish? How about one dish? If you could just give us a preview and explain it to our listeners.
Tonight we're going to try some different things, but I'm for sure going to make sure that I feature Sylvia Prize's milk-fed poulard. We'll serve that probably with some Brentwood corn, some Cadota figs. That's only one. I'm only telling you one.
All right. I mean, we like surprises. You were also talking about, you mentioned we were going to do this tasting menu, which is what we generally end up doing. And you were saying it's almost as much excitement for the kitchen, and it's really about the kitchen, that more so even than the guests. Explain what you were telling me.
I just think that when we get to a point where we cook for someone, or we're taking a look as a group, as a menu, as a whole that we want to construct without repetition and with continuity, that it just creates a dynamic within the kitchen that the guests are generally unaware of. But for me as a chef, it's very pleasing to be able to look at the team working together and putting up a product of pride, you know, and that's really what I love about the job.
We can't wait. Thanks, and I look forward to trying it all tonight.
Thank you.
Well, it was really one of the most impressive meals
we've
had.
Every bit as good as you might have implied from everything that the chef had to say. Just a wonderful experience. The wine pairings were equally extraordinary. We each had different things. We could have brought the menu, but reading the menu would have taken too much time on the show. The only advice I have for you is, when you're in San Francisco, this is absolutely a place you must go to. It's called Restaurant Michael Minna. It's off the lobby of the Westin San Francisco Hotel, right on Union Square. You can't miss it, and you shouldn't miss it.
No, and what a delight to be able to interview such articulate chefs.
Yep.
Well, I think it's about time for us to take a break now.
Data security and speed can be what puts your business ahead of your competition, but cost is important too. You might be paying every month for bandwidth you don't use. Let's talk about your company's disaster recovery system. Is it as effective and secure as it could be? What are you paying for your T1 line? I'll bet we can offer you a better deal. We're ASP Station, a premier independent server co-location facility and high-speed internet access provider. Virtually unlimited bandwidth,
co-location for your backup servers, off-site system backup, and secure access to your equipment 24/7. Check us out on the web at aspstation.net or call us at 412-661-6001. Easy number to remember, 412-661-6001. ASP Station, 412-661-6001.
You know how sometimes you hear people say, I wonder if I have the right investments. I wonder if I can retire early. I'm not sure how much money I will need to invest today to retire comfortably. How do I know what I should do to be able to help my children pay for college? What do I need to know to start a business or buy a house? We are the people who can help you find the answers to those questions. I'm Mary Grace Musenegi, the senior partner of the Musenegi Financial Group. We're a financial consulting firm that helps people make wise decisions with their money. We have a unique second opinion program that allows us to review your financial plans and investments with you without you changing advisors, companies, or products. So for a free consultation, please give us a call at 412-833-2888 or email me personally at mfgplanners, Mary Grace Musenegi at mfgplanners.com. Again, email me at marygrace@mfgplanners.com.
Still in California, and you're still listening to On the Menu Radio with Ann and Peter Haig. And we're going to hit on delightful.
A somewhat different experience. If the name Pat Coletto is familiar to you, then you'll associate that with fine and fabulously designed restaurants like Jardiniere and Boulevard and Farallon in San Francisco. I think probably the best way to describe Nick's Cove, which used to be a fish camp about 60 miles outside of San Francisco, you probably would say, Pat, you must be quite mad to attempt this development. And it took a long time, but it's there now. It opened just about 3 weeks before we got there in July, and it's just an entirely different experience.
What an absolutely fantastic, glorious situation. As I look out over this bay, I guess it's a cove. I'm going to turn this where we are over to the GM of Nick's Cove, Luke Chamberlain. Where are we? What are we?
Well, we're in Tomales Bay, which is roughly 55 miles due north of San Francisco. We're tucked along the shoreline on the windy shores of Tomales Bay, which is a historical fishing village, which is well known for its visitors who come out on the weekends from locations such as Santa Rosa, Petaluma, San Francisco, Napa Valley, and Sonoma to enjoy the visual beauties that exist here.
Now, traditionally, this was really a fisherman's camp.
It was indeed. For many, many years, the fisheries here were alive and well, as they are today, more recreationally so than commercially. But fishermen of all shapes and sizes would come from all areas to fish the waters of Tomales Bay, which are known for halibut, salmon, herring, smelt. They would dive along the rocky shoreline for abalone and go home with carloads of fish and fond memories.
We literally have waters lapping at the base of our cottage here. We could mention that Pat Coletto, our friend, the great and grand Pat Coletto, I don't know how would vintner, a Renaissance person, this is his development.
It is indeed, and he shares in his vision with a long-standing partner and chef, Mark Franz. They've developed a kinship over the years, and I perceive both Mark and Pat to be bon vivant. And that's my view of who they are and what they do. They know how to enjoy themselves.
And you don't?
Oh, I certainly do. I think that's why they brought me in the fold. I have some local flavors that I've worked on over the last 20 years, having farmed the bay as an abalone farmer and an oyster farmer. So I know the area very well, and I appreciate its natural beauty and feel that I could assist them in making this a world-class destination.
And listeners, I must say that when we first pulled up, I thought, oh, we just came from a fairly prestigious resort. I thought, this is going to be roughing it. Well, it's not roughing it whatsoever. It is graciously appointed, all kinds of amenities and quirky touches, such as the wonderful toilet, which is a throne.
Very comfortable seat where one can ponder and enjoy the view and take care of some of the natural things that we need to take care of every day.
And the place is filled with just wonderful eccentric decorations.
A lot of decorations, a lot of little touches, I think, that reflect Pat's attention to detail. I think that they're meant to be taken with a little bit of humor, but also just to show people that this place is naturally beautiful, and anything that's done in the rooms and to the property just enhances that natural beauty.
Yes, I mean, we have things like, is that a swordfish jaw?
It is a swordfish bill, actually, yes.
Well, I mean, you must come and see this. I'm going to ask you, and I know the answer already, but I'm going to have you explain to our listeners who actually will be the clientele at this place, which has only been open for 3 weeks, you said.
Correct. I think we'll have people from all destinations come here. Maybe at first a more local clientele, which for me means Santa Rosa, Petaluma, San Francisco. And then gradually, as the word spreads, we'll see people from the South Bay. And then obviously some of the international travelers will follow suit. We'll see people from Los Angeles, New York. And we've already had a few foreigners come by in our very brief history. And we're looking forward to those numbers growing.
And, of course, there is the first-class restaurant, simple but first-class, which the chef is Mark France, and we will be talking to him tomorrow. How do you like being in a serene, quiet, removed location?
Well, I think it takes a certain temperament in order to be able to fully enjoy the physical setting. It is bustling, though, when the restaurant's open and the people are here visiting on the weekends. You'd have a hard time thinking that you're in a remote fishing village. So that, to me, is the beauty of it, is that it has its moments of peacefulness, which we're enjoying now with water lapping underneath the floorboards, as you mentioned. And then it has that component where it's very festive and very alive. And that's when the people come on the weekends. And there's the day-to-day beauty of watching oystermen unload their catch at the end of our pier and carry fresh shellfish, you know, within a hand's reach of our plates. And their wonderful catch and their bounty actually makes it to our back door, and we serve it to people hours from it being removed from the bay.
Can't wait for that. You just made my day. You're telling me what I'm going to have for dinner. Tell me again, what kind of oyster?
I have oysters from Hog Island Oyster Company. Delicious Sweetwaters and Kumamo, two varieties that are grown here in the waters of Tomales Bay.
Well, as I said a few minutes ago, I can't wait. Is there anything else you'd like to tell anybody?
Come and visit us. We'd be delighted to show you the beauties of the area and share the bounty of the bay with you.
He's happy being here. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, now what happened to our Hog Island Oyster Guy
is on a different CD, and we'll play him next week probably.
Okay, but we did catch up with the chef.
We did catch up with the chef, and
Mark France.
He was supposed to be in a meeting, but he stayed and talked to us anyway.
Mark France is the chef owner of Nick's Cove, as well as Farallon, which is a favorite of ours in San Francisco, and the Water Bar, which is to come. Mark, the history of this place is fascinating. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about Nick's Cove?
Well, yeah, sure. It has been around for about 90 years. It used to be across the bay, about a mile and a half across the bay. It was a Slavic herring place where they would smoke the fish, and the hardest part was they couldn't get there a lot during when it rained, so they got tired of that. They floated the whole the whole place, all 12 cottages across a bay, because in those days you could do that kind of stuff. And that was in 1923. And so it's been here ever since. There's 12 cottages. There's still the Herring Smokehouse out at the end of the pier. We have a 400-foot pier, the last of its kind on this bay. So it's a one-of-a-kind. It's not going to happen again, ever.
And tell us about the restaurant. Who's cooking there?
I have two chefs. They're paired up. They have two children now, and they've been together for 10 years. And Matt and Heather Ames, they were with me at the last place with me for about 10 years. So they really, really are an amazing group. And we have a great group of people here, too. We have hard to find good help, but we've really lucked out, I think, because of who we are and, you know, the pull that we have. But we have a fantastic staff. So
the focus of the restaurant is, of course, seafood, which makes sense. We had fabulous Hog Island oysters last night.
Aren't they beautiful? I mean, I have worked with those for years, and there's nothing like when they come right out of the water. They're just glistening and fresh and beautiful. I mean, the difference even from San Francisco to here is like night and day. They glisten. They're perfect. And they pop so freshly.
And what are some of the other dishes that you're proud of?
Well, we have all sorts of things. We carry we show a lot of what Marin County has to serve. We have beautiful range-fed beef. It's all local. All the cheeses, of course, and the dairies across the street. Strauss is right across the street. We have beautiful fresh vegetables, all local. In fact, they come in the back door all the time. People who just garden bring them in, and we'll, you know, have them in for dinner, just as the way that we pay them for it. So it's really neat.
It sounds like a really wonderful community. I mean, who actually is your clientele?
We get people from, of course, there's the whole Bay Area, so we have a great eclectic group of people there. And then we have all the locals come here, too, because we have a good price range. You know, it's not expensive at all, especially for the products that we use. And I think we get a lot of people from Petaluma and Santa Rosa. There's quite a few people around here. We are sort of in the middle of nowhere, but yet we're fairly close. We're about half an hour away from most places, so it works.
Yeah, well, we had some Europeans sitting next to us last night, and the other thing, people seem to be very familiar with the menu, so I'm assuming they come frequently.
Well, what I did is I didn't make it extra fancy at all. This is the kind of food that, to me, when I drive out here, this is what I want. I want the real deal. We even have fried food. It's, you know, I want to have, you know, when you drive to the coast, you want crab, you want shellfish, you want just clean, good food. We don't play around with it much. It's just, it is what it is on the plate, and I think that speaks for itself.
And we had a wonderful time. Thank you.
Oh, good. Thanks so much.
Well, and the room was packed.
Packed, absolutely, yeah.
And, so, and it was a Tuesday night.
Right. Well, you know, it's a nice change of pace, especially people from nearby cities.
Oh, it's just bucolic. Doesn't quite get what it's like.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you're interested in a noisy crowd at dinner time, all having a good time, it does that too.
Right. Yeah, I liked it. There are only a few places do I not ever want to go back to that we've been to.
Well, this one's a keeper, listeners. This one is definitely a keeper. Look it up on the internet. You'll be able to get to it through the website when Peter gets around to putting the link on there. But in the meantime, it's called Nick's Cove. The location is Tomales Bay. It's about an hour and 20 minutes drive from San Francisco. If you go the right way, if you take the coast road, which you can do via Muir Woods on the way into San Francisco, I understand it takes a lot longer, but it's a whole lot prettier than driving down the freeway. So it's a charming place and definitely one that you should put on your list if you're going to be in California. It's accessible to the Sonoma Valley wine area very easily as well.
And boy, even the music doesn't make them stop.
Well, I'm trying to get my information.
Well, you are, but we're out of time now.
Okay, then. That'll be same time, same place next week.
Bye-bye.